And welcome back to Cool Science Radio. I'm John Wells. We were just speaking with John Nosta, the founder of Nosta Lab, a digital health think tank. Fascinating conversation. Really enjoyed having him on the program. We'll have him back. He's an interesting gentleman who is involved in a lot of things at the intersection of technology and healthcare. So, our next guest is Randall Monroe. He has written How To, Absurd Scientific Advice for Common Real-World Problems. Each week, millions of dedicated followers flock to his website, XKCD, to get his stick figure comic takes on current events, pop culture, science, and the mundanities of modern life. So, in How To, Monroe teaches us how to predict the weather by analyzing the pixels of your Facebook photo, or how to tell if you're a baby boomer or a 90s kid by merely measuring the radioactivity of your teeth, which I don't think we've ever done. But anyway, we spoke with him this past Tuesday. This is a taped conversation.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you, and congratulations, because today is the day that you're releasing your new book, How To, Absurd Scientific Advice for Real World. What are you doing on this celebratory day?
Oh, I mean, I'm for the moment going on a radio show, but after this, I will be going and doing an event with Kate Darling, who's a robot ethicist, who's one of the experts who I consulted with in my book.
Oh, perfect. You know, when I hear you speak, I sort of, for some reason, are processing in cartoons and stick figures. I should probably have that checked out, huh?
No, it's surprising how often people meet me and they look a little bit confused, and they're, I'm like, what is it? And they're like, well, I don't want to say I expected you to be a stick figure, but it's still a little surprising.
Yeah, exactly. Well, tell us why you wrote this book.
Well, I've always been one of those kids who, you know, from when I was really little, who would, whenever there's a task you have to do, and there's like a boring, mundane way to do it, it's going to take a little bit, but it'll work. I'm always like, oh, I have an idea that, okay, this is probably going to take more time to set up, but once I get it working, it'll save me time in the long run. Just watch. And inevitably, I would still be trying to get it to work by the time everyone else was already done. But in the process, I often found I would learn something either really fun or cool, or something that helped me solve a different problem later on, even if it didn't help with the thing I was working on. And I feel like that's a lot of how what I have fun with science, is that you'll start off trying to answer a question, and then that research will lead you down a rabbit hole where you find a bunch of other like cool stuff and learn new things, even if it doesn't solve the original problem you started with.
Randall, you're speaking to us from the campus of Harvard. You are a former NASA roboticist, and you left that life to be able to draw comics full time. So when we talk about stick figures, it's not just stick figures. It's comics. It's these great illustrations. But what I find with your book is that it seems simple at first, but the more you read into it, the more you realize that these are problems that we take for granted unless we're really curious. So obviously you've been a curious person your whole life. Tell us about how we can get there. Well, other than by reading your book, of course.
Oh man, I really don't know. I think to me, when I hear one of these, like these interesting problems, it's always like part of what I like about writing these kinds of things is that when I hear one of these problems, it to me it's like getting a song stuck in my head, where like I hear the question or the problem, and then I think I have an idea for it, but I don't know if it will work or not, and it's like I can't rest until I've figured out was that idea right or not, or is it a bad idea or what. And so one thing that's been really cool about learning about, you know, math, science, physics, is that there are a lot of problems where a lot of ideas where I feel like kind of everyone is a little curious about them, but learning how these tools can actually help us get to an answer is what makes it fun. You know, I feel like it's kind of universal to be curious about things like why, what would happen if the moon collided with the Earth, or, you know, that kind of thing. Like I think it's just inherently interesting. And that's really been what I've found with writing about this stuff, is that that people are just really curious. And maybe if there's a missing piece, it's just the realizing that some of these skills we learned in school or some things that seem kind of dry on paper, you can actually apply them to these problems that are really interesting, you know, and really exciting and get you answers.
And for our listeners, it's, you know, how to jump really high, how to make an emergency landing on an aircraft carrier or in a farm field. I know Elon Musk would love to read this chapter, How to Power Your House on Mars. So this is all fun stuff, but it's also really practical too. And you get to, you know, you get to think about these things, and it sort of generates more questions. And I have to ask you, you know, playing piano is not really intuitive for me, especially 88 keys, but you have designed a 235 key piano. How do you play that?
Well, So I actually don't really know how to play a regular piano beyond, you know, slowly picking out Heart and Soul or whatever. But this is one of the few questions where it was prompted by a letter from someone. But I was curious, so if you extend a piano in either direction, you can extend it out off of the end of the human hearing range. And so you could have keys that play notes that are too low to hear or too high to hear. And those are really interesting because even though people can't hear them, there are animals that can hear some of them, and other ones will show up on equipment for monitoring nuclear weapons tests, which is really interesting. There's this whole world of sound outside the range of human hearing. And I actually included a piece of music that I put together with the help of another friend that would, if you play it, you won't hear anything. If you played it on an infrasound piano, you won't hear anything, but if someone's running an atmospheric spectrograph, like the sorts that are used for nuclear weapon monitoring, it will actually draw out a picture on their equipment, which I really like. And the bonus is that because it's a piano that's outside the range of human hearing, if you aren't very good at playing it, no one will really know.
That is just zany, but I love it. Well, let's move to this. Well, it could be physics. It could be a bit of scientific explanation. It's also sociology. But you go into something like, you know, how to make friends. And you start off mm-hmm. with the likelihood of us actually running into people based on where we live on this earth. You mentioned the boreal forests. Not likely to mm-hmm. run into people. But in Paris, we're much more likely to run into people. How does this chart on your graph of how to make friends?
Well, I feel like making friends, the question of how to make friends, it sort of, to me, breaks up into the two different parts. There's, you know, how to meet people, and then how to make them be your friends once you meet them. And the how to meet people question is really interesting because it's one of those things that I think is actually a little bit understudied. There are a ton of studies on how people meet their future spouses, because everyone's interested in that because people care a lot about marriage. But there isn't a lot on where people meet their friends. And there's this one sociologist, Dr. Ruben Thomas, who did a paper on this, which I cited in the book, about, you know, at different ages, do you tend to meet people through neighbors, work, social organizations, et cetera? But I also talked about if you just blindfold yourself and walk straight, on average, how much time will it be before you run into someone? Which is actually sort of the same math that's used for certain gas molecule processes. But then once you've run into someone, of course, you have to befriend them, and that part is a lot harder. And so I have a little bit of a note about. You know, my tips on what to do or what not to do. One of the few kind of sincere points in the book.
If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're having a conversation with Randall Munroe. He has written How To: Absurd Scientific Advice for Common Real-World Problems. The book is being released today. He previously wrote What If? That spent 64 weeks on the New York Times best-selling list. And to give you something else to listen to or to look at, go to his TEDx video and check out why it's problematic for a pitcher to throw a baseball at 90% the speed of light. And finally, I believe that you are going to be in Salt Lake City on September 14th, signing books and talking to people and those sorts of things. Right, Randall?
Yes, yes, and I'm so excited to be there. I just went for the first time a couple of months ago, and I had no idea how pretty it was there.
Yeah, same for me.
The parking lots in Salt Lake City, the view from there are prettier than the nicest part places in the north.
Yeah, and I'm from Boston too, the Somerville area. So anyway,
it's a nice area, but man, those mountains.
Yeah. So talk about the importance of science and finding ways for everyone to understand and enjoy it. Why is that important?
I don't know. I think it's interesting, and it's important. I sort of hesitate. People often want to kind of stack it up against other areas of science and say, oh, this is why we need to get more kids into science and out of whatever else. No one ever seems to really be saying that which other things they want to get people out of. But I try not. One of the tendencies, especially for people who do physics, which is what I majored in, is to think like, oh, my field is the most important one. You know, we can do everything that everyone else can. And so I try not to do that. I try to be a little bit, not too kind of evangelical about my area of study or the kinds of science I'm interested in. But I do think it's just really interesting and really cool. And it's useful, but that's not always why I'm interested in it. It lets us answer questions. And I think that's kind of really at the core of it, of why I think it's useful and important. Fun and important is we all have questions, and sometimes scientific tools can help us answer them.
Well, how do your scientific tools help me charge my phone? Isn't that the ever-ending question and thing that we search for ad nauseum? Is a place to charge our phone and how to do it when you can't find an outlet? It gets a little complicated.
Or you do find an outlet and there's something plugged into it and it looks really important. And you're like, I wonder if I could unplug this just for a moment. But, you know, maybe this is a machine that's like keeping life support on for something somewhere, you know.
Exactly.
So I use this problem as an example. It was a fun way to look at different sources of power that there are kind of sloshing around in the world. So now and then you'll see people suggest an idea like, hey, we should put solar panels on all our roads, or we should, put wind turbines in this place and, get energy from this. And like, what's neat is like some of those ideas are really good and some of them really wouldn't work. And it's not always easy to tell which is which. And so I looked at in the indoor environment, like you're in a mall or an airport. Could you put a wind turbine in front of the air vents? And they've got air flowing through them. Could you generate power that way? And the answer is very little, not very much. And then I was like, okay, what about hydropower? Could you generate power from the faucets in the bathrooms or the sinks? And those, surprisingly, you could. And in fact, they did that for a while in the early days of electricity. There were devices that you would buy. Yeah, that would clamp on the devices you'd buy that would clamp onto your faucet in places where people had running water but no electricity, and it would use the water pressure to generate power. And so some of those things actually do work. But the best source of power, if you can't find an outlet in a place like a mall, is those escalators. If you set up an escalator to turn a water wheel, you could generate like many kilowatts of power, enough to power a house. Not even just a phone.
Well, we should definitely do that then.
Well, you got to be careful though. You don't want people to get on the escalator while the wheel is turning, because then it goes from a nice power source to a giant grinder.
Yeah, well, as long as we get our phones charged, we're good.
Put ropes around the bottom or something. The security will probably want to have a word with you if you tried that in real life.
Yeah, probably several words. Yeah. Well, hey. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. Randall Monroe has written How To: Absurd Scientific Advice for Common Real-World Problems. He'll be in Salt Lake City signing and talking to people on September 14th. Randall, thanks so much for joining us on Cool Science Radio.
Oh, no, thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.